Hello and welcome to the Pediatric Critical Care Medicine Audio Abstracts. I'm Dr. Erin Bennett, and on behalf of PCCM, I'm happy to present this audio recording of the research abstracts that appear in this month's issue. Let's get started. Abstract 1 is a feature article by Pelletier et al. Retrospective validation of a computerized physiologic equation to predict minute ventilation needs in critically ill children. Objectives: mechanical ventilation is pervasive among critically ill children. We sought to validate a computerized physiologic equation to predict minute ventilation requirements in children and test its performance against clinician actions in an in silico trial. Design: retrospective electronic medical record linkage cohort study. Setting: quaternary PICU. Patients included patients undergoing invasive mechanical ventilation, serial arterial blood gas or ABG analysis within 1 to 6 hours, and pharmacologic neuromuscular blockade. Measurements and main results. ABG values were filtered to those occurring during periods of neuromuscular blockade. Simultaneous ABG and minute ventilation data were linked to predict serial PaCO2 and pH values using previously published physiologic equations. There were 15,121 included ABGs across 500 encounters among 484 patients, with a median of 20 ABGs per encounter and an interquartile range of 10 to 43 ABGs at a duration of 3.6 hours with an interquartile range of 2.1 to 4.2 hours. The median PaCO2 prediction error was 0 millimeters of mercury with an interquartile range of negative 3.07 to 3. In Bland-Altman analysis, the mean error was negative 0.1 millimeters of mercury with a 95% confidence interval of negative 0.21 to 0.01 millimeters of mercury. A nested in silico trial of ABGs meeting criteria for weaning, defined as respiratory alkalosis or escalation, respiratory acidosis, compared the performance of recommended ventilator changes versus clinician decisions. There were 1,499 of 15,121 ABGs, or 9.9%, among 278 of 644, or 43.2% of encounters included in the trial. Calculated predictions were favorable to clinician actions in 1,124 of 1,499 ABGs, or 75%, equivalent to clinician choices in 26 of 1,499 ABGs, or 1.7%, and worse than clinician decisions in 349 of 1,499 ABGs, or 23.3%. Calculated recommendations were favorable to clinician decisions in sensitivity analyses limiting respiratory rate, analyzing only when clinicians made changes, excluding asthma, and excluding acute respiratory distress syndrome. Conclusions: a computerized equation to predict minute ventilation requirements outperformed clinicians' ventilator adjustments in 75% of ABGs from critically ill children in this retrospective analysis. Prospective validation studies are needed. Abstract 2 is a feature article by Stevens et al. Spiritual Care in PICUs, a U.S. survey of 245 training fellows from 2020 to 2021. Objectives: to understand the perspectives of pediatric fellows training in critical care subspecialties about providing spiritual care. Design: cross-sectional survey of United States National Residency Matching Program pediatric fellows training in critical care specialties. Setting: online survey open from April to May 2021. Subjects: a total of 720 fellows, including 165 cardiology, 259 critical care, and 296 neonatology were contacted, with a response rate of 245 of 720, or 34%. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. We assessed fellows' survey responses about spiritual care in neonatal and pediatric critical care units. Categorical data were compared using chi-square test or Fisher exact tests. The Wilcoxon rank sum test was used to compare the percentage correct on 10 multiple choice questions about world religions. Free text responses were independently coded by two research investigators. A total of 203 of 245, or 83% of responding fellows, had never received training about spiritual care, and 176 of 245, or 72%, indicated that they would be likely to incorporate spiritual care into their practice if they received training. Prior training was associated with increased familiarity with the framework for taking a spiritual history with a p-value less than 0.001 and increased knowledge of spiritual practices that could influence medical care with a p-value equal to 0.03. Prior training was also associated with increased self-reported frequency of taking a spiritual history with a p-value less than 0.001 and comfort in referring families to spiritual care resources with a p-value equal to 0.02. Lack of time and training were the most reported barriers to providing spiritual care. Conclusions. Providing spiritual care for families is important in critical care settings. In 2020 to 2021 in the United States, 245 pediatric critical care fellows responded to a survey about spiritual care in their practice and reported that they lacked training in this subject. An opportunity exists to implement spiritual care curricula into pediatric fellowship training. Abstract 3 is a feature article by Olive et al. Nudging during pediatric intensive care conferences with family members, retrospective analysis of transcripts from a single center from 2015 to 2019. Objectives. Nudging, a behavioral economics concept, subtly influences decision-making without coercion or limiting choice. Despite its frequent use, the specific application of nudging techniques by clinicians in shared decision-making is understudied. Our aim was to analyze clinicians' use of nudging in a curated dataset of family care conferences in the PICU. Design. Between 2019 and 2020, we retrospectively studied and coded 70 previously recorded care conference transcripts that involved physicians and families from 2015 to 2019. We focused on decision-making discussions examining instances of nudging, namely salience, framing, options, default, endowment, commission, omission, recommend, expert opinion, certainty, and social norms. Nudging instances were categorized by decision type, including tracheostomy, goals of care, or procedures. Setting: single center quaternary pediatric facility with general and cardiac ICUs. There were no patients in this study, and there were no interventions. Measurements: we assessed the pattern and frequency of nudges in each transcript. Main results: 63 of the 70 transcripts included shared decision-making episodes. These episodes represented a total of 11 decision categories based on the subject matter of nudging instances, with 308 decision episodes across all transcripts, with a median of 5 and an interquartile range of 4 to 6 per conference. Tracheostomy was the most frequently discussed decision. A total of 1,096 nudging instances were identified across the conferences, with a median of 8 nudge types per conference and an interquartile range of 6 to 10. The most frequent nudging strategy used was gain frame in 203 of 1,096 or 18.5%, followed by loss frame in 150 of 1,096 or 13.7%. Conclusions. Nudging is routinely employed by clinicians to guide decision-making primarily through gain or loss framing. This retrospective analysis aids in understanding nudging in care conferences. It offers insight into potential risks and benefits of these techniques. It highlights ways in which their application has been used by caregivers, and it may be a resource for future trainee curriculum development. Abstract 4 is a clinical investigation by Lee et al. Organ donation in Canadian PICUs, a cross-sectional survey from 2021 to 2022. Objectives: to understand contemporary pediatric organ donation programs in Canadian PICUs, including policies and practices, data collection and reporting, and system and process barriers. Design: a cross-sectional survey carried out from 2021 to 2022. Setting: Canadian PICUs affiliated with a donor physician network. Subjects included pediatric intensivists identified as the donation program lead or most knowledgeable about donation for their institution. Measurements and main results. A 19-item survey was developed through collaboration with stakeholders from the organ donation and transplantation community within Canada. Domains and items were generated and reduced iteratively during an in-person workshop. Pre-testing and pilot testing were completed to ensure readability, flow, clinical sensibility, and construct validity. 15 of 16, or 94%, of invited Canadian PICUs from 7 provinces completed the survey, representing 88%, or 15 of 18, of all non-cardiac Canadian PICUs. Surveys were completed between June 2021 and September 2022. All units support donation after death by neurologic criteria. 14 of 15 indicated donation policies were in place, and 1 of 15 indicated no policy but the ability to facilitate donation. 13 of 15 units, or 87%, support donation after death by circulatory criteria with policies in place, with 11 of 13 of these indicating routine support of donation opportunities. The majority, or 13 of 15 units, identified a donation champion. Of the 16 identified champions across these centers, 13 were physicians and 3 were registered nurses or nurse practitioners. 8 of 13 units, or 62%, with donation champions had positions supported financially, of which 5 units came from the organ donation organization and the other 3 came from the provincial health authority. Finally, only 3 of 15 PICU donation programs have a pediatric donation committee with family involvement. Variability exists in identification, including determination of death practices, referral, and approach for donation between units. Conclusions. Although all Canadian PICUs support donation after death by neurologic criteria, and most support donation after death by circulatory criteria, variability exists in the identification, referral, and approach of potential donors. There is a notable lack of family involvement in pediatric donation programs. There are many opportunities for standardization of PICU donation programs, which may result in improved rates of pediatric organ donation in Canada. Abstract 5 is a clinical investigation by Liu et al., Epidemiology and Clinical Characteristics of Pediatric Sepsis in PICUs in Southwest China, a prospective multicenter study. Objectives: to describe the epidemiological characteristics of pediatric sepsis in Southwest China PICUs. Design: a prospective multicenter and observational study. Setting: 12 PICUs in Southwest China. Patients included the patients admitted to the PICU from April 1, 2022 to March 31, 2023. The age range from 28 days to 18 years. All patients met the criteria of severe sepsis or septic shock. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Of the 31 PICUs invited to participate, 12 PICUs with a capacity of 292 beds enrolled patients in the study. During the study period, 11,238 children were admitted to the participating PICUs, 367 or 3.3% of whom met the diagnosis of severe sepsis or septic shock. The most prevalent sites of infection were the respiratory system in 55% and the digestive system in 15%. The primary treatments administered to these patients included antibiotics in 100%, albumin in 61.3%, invasive mechanical ventilation in 58.7%, glucocorticoids in 55.6%, blood products in 51%, gamma globulin in 51%, and vasoactive medications in 46.6%. Sepsis-related mortality in the PICU was 11.2% in 41 of 367. Nearly half of the sepsis deaths occurred within the first 3 days of PICU admission in 22 of 41, or 53.7%. The mortality rate of septic shock was 32 of 167, or 19.2%, and was significantly higher than that of severe sepsis, which was 9 of 200, or 4.5%, with a p-value less than 0.001. The outcomes of a multivariate logistic regression analysis suggested that a higher pediatric sequential organ failure assessment score and the use of invasive mechanical ventilation and vasoactive medications were independently associated with PICU mortality in children with sepsis. Conclusions. This report updates the epidemiological data of pediatric sepsis in PICUs in Southwest China. Sepsis is still a life-threatening disease in children. Abstract 6 is a clinical investigation by Akandi Asil et al., Automatic Calculator for the Pediatric Sequential Organ Failure Assessment Score, Development and External Validation in a Single Center 7-Year Cohort from 2015 to 2021. Objectives. The Pediatric Sequential Organ Failure Assessment, or PSOFA score, summarizes severity of organ dysfunction and can be used to predict in-hospital mortality. Manual calculation of the PSOFA score is time-consuming and prone to human error. An automated method that is open source, flexible, and scalable for calculating the PSOFA score directly from electronic health record data is desirable. Design: single-center retrospective cohort study. Setting: quaternary 40-bed PICU. Patients: all patients admitted to the PICU between 2015 and 2021 with ICU stay of at least 24 hours. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. We used 77 records to evaluate the automated score. The automated algorithm had an overall accuracy of 97%. The algorithm calculated the respiratory component of two cases incorrectly. An expert human annotator had an initial accuracy of 75% at the patient level and 95% at the component level. An untrained human annotator with general clinical research experience had an overall accuracy of 16% and component-wise accuracy of 67%. Weighted kappa for agreement between the automated method and the expert annotator's initial score was 0.92, with a 95% confidence interval of 0.88 to 0.95, and between the untrained human annotator and the automated score was 0.5, with a 95% confidence interval of 0.36 to 0.61. Data from 9,146 patients with in-hospital mortality of 3.6% were included to validate externally the discriminability of the automated PSOFA score. The admission day PSOFA score had an area under the receiver operating characteristic curve of 0.79 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.77 to 0.82. Conclusions. The developed automated algorithm calculates PSOFA score with high accuracy and is more accurate than a trained expert rater and non-trained data abstractor. PSOFA's performance for predicting in-hospital mortality was lower in our cohort than it was for the originally derived score. Abstract 7 is a clinical investigation by Akandi Asil et al. Dynamic prediction of mortality using longitudinally measured pediatric sequential organ failure assessment scores, a joint modeling approach. Objectives. The pediatric sequential organ failure assessment, or PSOFA score, was designed to track illness severity and predict mortality in critically ill children. Most commonly, PSOFA at a point in time is used to assess a static patient condition. However, this approach has a significant drawback because it fails to consider any changes in a patient's condition during their PICU stay, and especially their response to initial critical care treatment. We aim to evaluate the performance of longitudinal PSOFA scores for predicting mortality. Design: single-center retrospective cohort study. Setting: quaternary 40-bed PICU. Patients included all patients admitted to the PICU between 2015 and 2021 with at least 24 hours of ICU stay. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. We calculated daily PSOFA scores up to 30 days or until death or discharge from the PICU if earlier. We used the joint longitudinal and time-to-event data model for the dynamic prediction of 30-day in-hospital mortality. The data set, which included 9,146 patients with a 30-day in-hospital mortality of 2.6%, was divided randomly into a training subset, 75%, and validation subset, 25%, and subjected to 40 repeated stratified cross-validations. We used dynamic area under the curve to evaluate the discriminative performance of the model. Compared with the admission day PSOFA score, area under the curve for predicting mortality between days 5 and 30 was improved on average by 6.4% with a 95% confidence interval of 6.3 to 6.6% using longitudinal PSOFA scores from the first 3 days and by 9.2% with a 95% confidence interval of 9 to 9.5% using scores from the first 5 days. Conclusions. Compared with admission day PSOFA scores, longitudinal PSOFA scores improved the accuracy of mortality prediction in PICU patients at a single center. The PSOFA score has the potential to be used dynamically for the evaluation of patient conditions. Abstract 8 is a clinical investigation by Han et al. High variability in the duration of chest compression interruption is associated with poor outcomes in pediatric extracorporeal cardiopulmonary resuscitation. Objectives. To determine the association between chest compression interruption patterns and outcomes in pediatric patients undergoing extracorporeal cardiopulmonary resuscitation, or ECPR. Design. Cardiopulmonary resuscitation, or CPR, data were collected using defibrillator electrode and bedside monitor waveforms from pediatric ECPR cases between 2013 and 2021. Duration and variability of chest compression interruption during cannulation for ECPR was determined and compared with survival to discharge using Fisher's exact test and logistic regressions with cluster robust SES for adjusted analyses. Setting: quaternary care children's hospital. Patients included pediatric patients undergoing ECPR. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Of 41 ECPR events, median age was 0.7 years with an interquartile range of 0.1 to 5.4 years, and 37% or 15 of 41 survived to hospital discharge with 73% or 11 of 15 survivors having a favorable neurologic outcome. Median duration of CPR from the start of ECPR cannulation procedure to initiation of extracorporeal membrane oxygenation or ECMO flow was 21 minutes, with an interquartile range of 18 to 30. Median duration of no-flow times associated with chest compression interruption during ECMO cannulation was 11 seconds, with an interquartile range of 5 to 28 seconds. Following planned adjustments for known confounders, survival to discharge was inversely associated with maximum duration of chest compression interruption, with an odds ratio of 0.91 and a range of 0.86 to 0.95 with a p-value equal to 0.04, as well as the variability in the chest compression interruption duration, with an odds ratio of 0.96, a range of 0.93 to 0.99, and a p-value equal to 0.04. Cases with both above average chest compression interruption duration and higher chest compression interruption variability with a standard deviation of greater than 30 seconds were associated with the lowest survival, 12% versus 54%, and a p-value equal to 0.009. Interaction modeling suggests that lower variability in chest compression interruption is associated with improved survival, especially in cases where average chest compression interruption durations are higher. Conclusions: shorter duration of chest compression interruption and lower variability in chest compression interruption during cannulation for ECPR were associated with survival following refractory pediatric cardiac arrest. Abstract 9 is an online clinical investigation by Chanthong et al. Rotational thromboelastometry and clot waveform analysis as point-of-care tests for diagnosis of disseminated intravascular coagulation in critically ill children in Thailand. Objectives: this study aimed to determine the test performances of rotational thromboelastometry, or ROTEM, and activated partial thromboplastin time-based clot waveform analysis, compared with the International Society on Thrombosis and Hemostasis Disseminated Intravascular Coagulation, or ISTHDIC score for diagnosis of overt disseminated intravascular coagulation, or ODIC, in critically ill children. Prognostic indicators of DIC complications were also evaluated. Design: a prospective cross-sectional observational study was conducted. ROTEM and activated partial thromboplastin time-based clot waveform analysis were assessed alongside standard parameters based on the ISTH-DIC score and natural anticoagulants. Both conventional and global hemostatic tests were repeated on days 3 to 5 for non-overt DIC. Setting: PICU of the Department of Pediatrics, Faculty of Medicine, Chiang Mai University, Chiang Mai, Thailand. Subjects: infants and children who were admitted to the PICU with underlying diseases predisposed to DIC, such as sepsis, malignancy, major surgery, trauma, or severe illness, were included in the study between July 1, 2021 and November 30, 2022. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results: 64 children were enrolled in this study. The prevalence of ODIC was 20.3%. Regarding ROTEM parameters, using extem clot formation time cutoff of greater than 102 seconds provided sensitivity and specificity of 90.9% and 80.9% respectively for diagnosing ODIC with the area under the curve of 0.86. In the case of activated partial thromboplastin time-based clot waveform analysis performance, no biphasic waveform was observed, whereas both maximum coagulation acceleration of less than 0.35% per second squared and maximum coagulation deceleration of less than 0.25% per second squared demonstrated identical sensitivities of 76.9% and specificities of 79.6%. Combining two global hemostatic tests significantly improved the diagnostic performance, with intem clot formation time plus extem clot formation time plus min 2 area under the curve of 0.92 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.8 to 1 versus extem clot formation time area under the curve of 0.86 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.75 to 0.96 and a p-value equal to 0.034. Bleeding was the most common consequence. In multivariable logistic regression analysis, maximum coagulation acceleration of less than 0.36% per second squared was an independent risk factor for bleeding complications, with an adjusted odds ratio of 15.08, a 95% confidence interval of 1.08 to 211.15, and a p-value equal to 0.044. Conclusions. ROTEM and activated partial thromboplastin time-based clot waveform analysis were valuable diagnostic tools in critically ill children who might require point-of-care tests. Maximum coagulation acceleration, or MIN2, showed significant clinical implications for predicting bleeding events in this population. Abstract 10 is an online clinical investigation by Weber et al. Safety and efficacy of ethanol for catheter salvage and central line-associated bloodstream infection prophylaxis in polyurethane catheters in the PICU. Objectives. Ethanol lock therapy is a potential method of central catheter salvage following central line-associated bloodstream infection or CLABSI, although there is potential risk of catheter damage in polyurethane catheters. Further, there is limited efficacy data across the spectrum of common pediatric catheters, and published ethanol lock therapy protocols describe dwell times that are not feasible for critically ill children. We sought to evaluate the safety and efficacy of ethanol lock therapy in polyurethane catheters using brief 30-minute to 2-hour dwell times in our PICU. Design: investigational pilot study using historical control data. Setting: PICU in quaternary care freestanding children's hospital. Interventions: ethanol lock therapy in polyurethane central venous catheters for catheter salvage. Results: ethanol lock therapy with brief dwell times was used in 25 patients, 22 of whom were bacteremic. Ultimately, 11 patients comprising 14 catheters were diagnosed with a primary CLABSI. The catheter salvage rate in primary CLABSI patients receiving ethanol lock therapy was 92% in 13 of 14, and significantly higher than the salvage rate in patients receiving antibiotics alone or non-ethanol lock therapy in 62% or 39 of 64, with a mean difference of 0.32, a 95% confidence interval of 0.14 to 0.5, and a p-value equal to 0.03. The rate of catheter fracture in all patients receiving ethanol lock therapy was 8% in 2 of 25, while the rate of fracture in the non-ethanol lock therapy group was 13% in 8 of 64, with a mean difference of negative 0.05, a 95% confidence interval of negative 0.18 to 0.09, and a p-value equal to 0.72. The rate of tissue plasminogen activator, or TPA, use in the ethanol lock therapy group was 8% in 2 of 25, whereas the rate of TPA use in the non-ethanol lock therapy group was significantly higher at 42% in 26 of 64, with a mean difference of negative 0.34 with a 95% confidence interval of negative 0.49 to negative 0.17 and a p-value equal to 0.002. Conclusions: the use of ethanol lock therapy for catheter salvage and prophylaxis in the PICU is safe in a variety of polyurethane catheters. Dwell times ranging from 30 minutes to 2 hours were effective in sterilizing the catheters while allowing other therapies to continue. This approach may decrease the need for frequent line changes in a medically fragile pediatric population. Abstract 11 is an online clinical investigation by Ferguson et al. Measuring physical function in the PICU, development and testing of a children's version, ages 2 to 18 years, of the CHELSEA Critical Care Physical Assessment Tool. Objectives: to adapt and develop a reliable and easily administered outcome measure of physical and respiratory function in critically ill children in the PICU. Design: modify Delphi study to adapt the CHELSEA Critical Care Physical Assessment Tool for use in children 2 to 18 years old with subsequent prospective testing in a single-center cohort. Setting: single center, tertiary PICU. Subjects: Delphi process in 27 panelists, including physiotherapists, occupational therapists, and pediatric intensivists from 7 countries from January 2018 to March 2018. Cohort study in 54 patients admitted to PICU for greater than 24 hours over a 3-month period from April 2018 to June 2018, with a median age of 5.5 years, with an interquartile range of 3 to 12.75 years, 33 of 54 male and 38 of 54 invasively ventilated. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results: 3 Delphi iterations were required to reach greater than or equal to 80% consensus in all the children's CHELSEA Critical Care Physical Assessment items. In the subsequent cohort study, 6 physiotherapists used the CHELSEA Critical Care Physical Assessment Tool and scored 54 participants with a total of 106 observations. The median CHELSEA Critical Care Physical Assessment Tool score was 14.5 with an interquartile range of 3 to 25 out of a possible total of 50. Inter-rater reliability for 30 randomly selected participants was excellent, with an intra-class correlation coefficient of 0.998. Completion rate of Chelsea Critical Care Physical Assessment in the 54 patients occurred in 78 of 106 occasions, or 74%. Conclusions. The Chelsea Critical Care Physical Assessment tool content that was developed using Delphi methodology provided a feasible and clinically relevant tool for use in assessing physical morbidity in PICU patients 2 to 18 years old. Overall, the Chelsea Critical Care Physical Assessment scores were low, demonstrating low levels of physical function and high levels of immobility during PICU care. Abstract 12 is an online cardiac intensive care article by Bertrand et al. Cardiac surgery-associated acute kidney injury in neonates undergoing the Norwood operation. Retrospective analysis of the multicenter neonatal and pediatric heart and renal outcomes network dataset from 2015 to 2018. Objectives. Cardiac surgery-associated acute kidney injury is associated with adverse outcomes. Single-center studies suggest that the prevalence of cardiac surgery-associated acute kidney injury is high after the Norwood procedure or stage 1 palliation, but multicenter data are lacking. Design. A secondary analysis of the neonatal and pediatric heart and renal outcomes network, or NEFRON, multicenter cohort who underwent stage 1 palliation. Using neonatal modification of kidney disease improving global outcomes, or KDIGO criteria, perioperative associations between cardiac surgery-associated acute kidney injury with morbidity and mortality were examined. A sensitivity analysis, with the exclusion of prophylactic peritoneal dialysis patients, was performed. Setting. 22 hospitals participating in the Pediatric Cardiac Critical Care Consortium, or PC4, and contributing to NEFRON. Patients included 347 neonates less than 30 days old with stage 1 palliation managed between September 2015 and January 2018. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Of 347 patients, cardiac surgery-associated acute kidney injury occurred in 231, or 67%. The maximum stages were as follows. Stage 1 in 141 of 347 and 41%, Stage 2 in 51 of 347, or 15%, and stage 3 in 39 of 347, or 11%. Severe cardiac surgery-associated acute kidney injury, stages 2 and 3, peaked on the first postoperative day. In multivariable analysis, preoperative feeding was associated with lower odds of cardiac surgery-associated acute kidney injury, with an odds ratio of 0.48, and a 95% confidence interval of 0.27 to 0.86, whereas prophylactic peritoneal dialysis was associated with greater odds of severe cardiac surgery-associated acute kidney injury, with an odds ratio of 3.67 and a 95% confidence interval of 1.88 to 7.19. We failed to identify an association between prophylactic peritoneal dialysis and increased creatinine, with an odds ratio of 1.85 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.82 to 4.14, but cannot exclude the possibility of a fourfold increase in odds. Hospital mortality was 5.5% with an N equal to 19. After adjusting for risk covariates and center effect, severe cardiac surgery-associated acute kidney injury was associated with greater odds of hospital mortality, with an odds ratio of 3.67 and a 95% confidence interval of 1.11 to 12.16. We failed to find associations between severe cardiac surgery-associated acute kidney injury and respiratory support or length of stay. The sensitivity analysis using peritoneal dialysis failed to show associations between severe cardiac surgery-associated acute kidney injury and outcome. Conclusions. KDIGO-defined cardiac surgery-associated acute kidney injury occurred frequently and early postoperatively in this 2015 to 2018 multicenter PC4 and NEFRON cohort of neonates after stage 1 palliation. We failed to identify associations between resource utilization and cardiac surgery-associated acute kidney injury, but there was an association between severe cardiac surgery-associated acute kidney injury and greater odds of mortality in this high-risk cohort, improving the precision for defining clinically relevant neonatal cardiac surgery-associated acute kidney injury remains a priority. Abstract 13 is an online PCCM perspective by Butler et al. Supported privacy, an essential principle for end-of-life care for children and families in the PICU. Caring for children and their families at the end of life is an essential but challenging aspect of care in the PICU. During and following a child's death, families often report a simultaneous need for protected privacy and ongoing supportive presence from staff. Balancing these seemingly paradoxical needs can be difficult for PICU staff and can often lead to the family feeling intruded upon or abandoned during their end-of-life experience. In this Pediatric Critical Care Medicine Perspectives piece, we reframe provision of privacy at the end of life in the PICU and describe an essential principle that aims to help the interprofessional PICU team simultaneously meet these two opposing family needs, called supported privacy. In addition, we offer concrete recommendations to actualize supported privacy in the PICU, focusing on environmental considerations, practical needs, and emotional responses. By incorporating the principles of supported privacy into end-of-life care practices, clinicians can support the delivery of high-quality care that meets the needs of children and families navigating the challenges and supports of end-of-life in the PICU. Abstract 14 is an online PCCM perspective by Ettinger et al. Clinical Full-Time Equivalent in PICUs, Survey of the U.S. Pediatric Critical Care Chiefs Network from 2020 to 2022. Objectives. To inform workforce planning for pediatric critical care physicians, it is important to understand current staffing models and the spectrum of clinical responsibilities of physicians. Our objective was to describe the expected workload associated with a clinical full-time equivalent, or FTE, in PICUs across the U.S. Pediatric Critical Care Chiefs Network. Design, cross-sectional survey. Setting, PICUs participating in the Pediatric Critical Care Chiefs Network. Subjects, PICU division chiefs or designees participating in the Pediatric Critical Care Chiefs Network from 2020 to 2022. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. A series of three surveys were used to capture unit characteristics and clinical responsibilities for an estimated 1.0 clinical FTE intensivist. Out of a total of 156 PICUs in the Pediatric Critical Care Chiefs Network, the response rate was 46 or 30% to all three distributed surveys. Respondents used one of four models to describe the construction of a clinical FTE: total clinical hours, total clinical shifts, total weeks of service, or percent full-time equivalent. Results were stratified by unit size. The model used for construction of a clinical FTE did not vary significantly by the total number of faculty, nor the total number of beds. The clinical responsibilities annually for a 1.0 clinical FTE were as follows: a median of 1,750 total clinical hours with an interquartile range of 1,483 to 1,858 hours, a median of 142 total clinical shifts with an interquartile range of 129 to 177 clinical shifts, a median of 13 total weeks of service with an interquartile range of 11.3 to 16 weeks of service, and a median of 52 total night shifts with an interquartile range of 36 to 60 night shifts. When stratified by unit size, larger units had fewer nights or overnight hours but covered more beds per shift. Conclusions. This survey of the Pediatric Critical Care Chiefs Network from 2020 to 2022 provides the most contemporary description of clinical responsibilities associated with a clinical FTE physician in pediatric critical care. A 1.0 clinical FTE varies depending on unit size. There is no correlation between the model used to construct a clinical FTE and the associated clinical responsibilities. This concludes the abstracts for the May 2024 issue of Pediatric Critical Care Medicine. Thank you very much for listening. For more journal-related content, including access to the articles mentioned in this recording, please visit pccmjournal.org. Members of the SCCM Pediatric Section receive complimentary access to the PCCM Journal.